Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Ksubas Daf Pei Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief four-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 6 lines from the top of Daf Pei Aleph. We must inform you that we are in the middle of a sugya that we started at the end of our last shiur. Before we begin the actual Gemara text, we have a topic heading on the side we call also hemshech, a continuation. As we just said, we're in the middle of a discussion. And also the mivneh, the structural note, is combined into one with the topic. Triangles appear, and as you scan down the page, you'll notice the triangles appear in alternating directions. So this is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the give-and-take style of the Gemara. The point facing up indicates kushios, shel Rava, questions that Rava presents. Lama yavam eino yochol litoin. Why can the yavam not claim, after we have started a discussion that when a shomeres yavam dies, so the sources indicated that the yavam, the surviving brother of or her surviving brother-in-law, is expected to bury her. That's his responsibility. So why is it that he cannot litoin? Why can he not counterclaim? Ach ani yoresh, I inherit my brother avol ishto ein ani kovra. But as far as his wife, I'm not obligated to bury her. So why can't he say that? Why do we give the impression, we read in the source, 4 lines from the top, Yorsheho Yorshek Subasa, the one who inherits the ksuba that was due to be paid to her, who inherits that? Well, the Yavam is the one that inherits that. And it said, Chayovim Bikfurasa. And that gives us the impression that because he is getting the ksuba, because he is inheriting that money, so he has to bury her. So the Gemara continues on the 6th line from the top. Omar Rava, Valema, let the Yavam claim, Ach Ani Yoresh, I inherit my brother, the ksuba that the source says that I inherit, I'm inheriting it through my brother. I'm not inheriting the Yavama that would then, in exchange for my inheriting her, so I could see that I'd be obligated to bury her. I'm not inheriting her. A woman, when she comes into the marriage, she brings in what we call a nidunya, dowry, properties from her father's house. When the Shemeris Yavam dies, the properties that she had brought into her marriage, I don't inherit those. So the ksuba, the money that my brother had owed to the wife that just died, well, that's my brother's money. I'm inheriting him. It wasn't paid to her. The Gemara, so he's saying again, Ach ani yoresh ishto, ein ani kover, I'm not going to bury her. Omar le Abaye. So Abaye says to Rava, Mishum deboyin olav mishnei tzodin. The reason that this Yavam is bound to bury her is because we have a claim against him from two sides. And the Gemara spells it out. Im ochiv yoresh, if you're inheriting the brother, then yikbor es ishto, then you should bury the wife of your brother. In other words, just as he would have buried her had she died before him. And Rashi adds, even if she had not brought anything into the marriage, it was implied just before, and we tried to convey this in our explanation, that the brother's claiming, listen, I'm not getting anything from you. Whatever you brought into my brother's marriage, your family is going to inherit that. The woman's family, not me. So Abaye points out, listen, if you're inheriting your brother, just like your brother, had he been alive, would have had to bury her, even if she brought him nothing, so too you. Im eino kover es ishto, and if you refuse to bury her, then yitain ksubasa, then pay the ksuba. In other words, you have to lay out the ksuba money. Obviously, you're not going to pay to the dead, but you would lay out that money that you claim to be inheriting, the ksuba money, let that cover the burial costs. Omar Lay. So Rava says back, Hachi Koamina. This is what I was saying. Ach ani yoresh. The ksuba I'm inheriting through him. Es ishto ein ani kover. And I'm not going to bury the wife. V'i mishum ksuba. And if you're going to advance this argument about the ksuba that I would, I'd have to pay her the ksuba. Lo nitno ksuba ligvois mechayim. The ksuba money is not something that is paid during the lifetime of one's husband. A husband, while he's alive, doesn't pay the ksuba. And I stand in the husband's stead. I am the yavam. I am supposed to be marrying. I am supposed to have been marrying her. She died, so I can't marry her. But I'm still alive. So with this phrase in mind, we would be removing the ksuba from the picture. That lo nitno ksuba ligvos mechaim. That ksuba, to suggest that I should pay out the ksuba to the welfare of the woman, but ksubas are not paid when husbands or husbands' replacements are still alive. Well, we respond to that. In other words, up till this point, then, there seems to be a claim that the Yavam can make that he doesn't have to bury her. We need an answer to that. So Gemara has a long response. Man shamis lei de islei medrash ksuba. Before we go further in the Gemara, let's glance at the side. We have a subtopic heading. It reads, Birur, an analysis, clarification, im nitno ksuba ligvois leisha mechaim shel baal, or the yavam. Can a ksuba be expected to be paid to the woman when the husband or the yavam are still alive? Of course, we're not talking about a divorce situation. We're talking about an almona situation. The im nitan ligvois, if it were possible to be collected during the lifetime, as nuchal lechayev as hayavam bekvurasa, then we would be able to obligate the yavam to either bury her or pay the ksuba. So now, the Gemara. We read again the inverted triangle. Man shamis lei de islei medrash ksuba. Which Tanaic authority has been known to derive laws to focus on the translation of the text of the ksuba in a very we'll say legal fashion? Rashi says, "Man shamis lei de islei medrash ksuba shedoresh loshen ksuba," that darshins that expounds upon the language of the ksuba shekosuv bo. It says in the following, when you marry someone else, based on sugyas we've learned earlier in the Masechta, we might say when you get ready to marry someone else, then take the ksuba money. Demino daikis, from this phrase, one could learn, lo nitno ksuba ligvois mechayim. The The ksuba can't be collected while the husband is still alive, because at that point she can't marry someone else. She's married to her husband. So the Gemara puts us to the challenge to figure out who is the Tana that darshins ksuba. So the Gemara continues, Beis Shammai. That's the approach Beis Shammai takes. And Rashi gives the background for that. We continue in the Gemara, V'shamina luhu l'Beis Shammai, and we happen to know the opinion of Beis Shammai, D'amri shtar ha'ime ligvois kegavui domi. Another important concept. A shtar, a contract, or a document, a bill of debt that is destined to be used as an instrument of collection. So ha'oimei ligvos, it's standing to be used as an instrument of collection. It's considered as if the money has already been collected. The simplest case would be a malven alove, the man loaned money, he laid out money, he lent money to a borrower, and the borrower wrote a shtar to the malve. The malve holds a bill of collection. Now he hasn't collected the money yet, but according to this principle, since he has a shtar entitling him to collect, it's as if he collected. Where else do we see this? This non, we see in the following source. Now, this source deals with the topic of sota. The sota is a woman, a married woman, who is suspected of immorality, of having conducted intimacy as a married woman with another man. In the time of the Beis Hamikdash, she would be brought to the Beis Hamikdash and subjected to a ritual involving the drinking of water, a special water in the Beis Hamikdash that would reveal whether she's innocent or guilty. There's a whole Masechta dedicated to the topic of Sota, but for our purposes, I think that's enough. So, what happens if you have a woman that's suspected of foul play? Her husband is the one that's supposed to bring her to the Beis Hamikdash for the drinking of that water. And, of course, if she's guilty, so she doesn't get a ksuba. She's a villainous, sinning woman that loses her ksuba rights. If she's innocent, so of course she does get it. But what happens if the husband dies before they ever get to the Beis Hamikdash? So the husband is the one that's supposed to bring her there for the drinking purposes. He gives her to drink, so to speak. What happens if he dies and she's left in limbo, not being subjected to the test? Now she's a widow. Does she get her ksuba? So the source says, "May subalein ad shelo shasu." The husbands of suspected women, the sota women, die before they ever drink. Beishamai omrim notlos ksuba velo shosos. Now we dashed underline Beishamai because he's the focus of our attention. Ubeis hillel omrim. We skip the bracketed section. The text inside isn't accurate. Beis hillel omrim mitoch shelo shosos lo notlos ksuba. Since they don't drink, so they don't get the ksuba. Let's go over the bracketed section, even though it's within Beis Hillel, which is not the focus of our discussion right now. But reading again, Beis Hillel Omrim, Oy Shoysais, Oy Loy Noitlois Ksuba. Either they drink, or they forfeit their rights to the ksuba. So the Gemara asks, Oh Shosos, how can this woman be given to drink? The Pasuk says that the husband brings his wife to the Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash, and then she drinks, and that is lacking. You don't have the Hevi Ha'ish aspect, the husband bringing. He's dead. Elo, rather, Beis Hillel says, Mitoch Shelo Shosos, Lo Notlos Ksub. Since they don't drink, they don't have a right to the Ksuba. But again, we're focusing on Beis Shammai. And now the Gemara continues, Beis Shammai Oimrim, Noitlois Ksuba Veloshosos. They're entitled to the Ksuba. Ve'amai, why should they be entitled to the Ksuba? Sfeika hu? Sofek Zanoi, Sofek Lo Zanoi. You're dealing with a Sofek, with a doubt. maybe she was immoral and maybe not. The Ka'asi Suffolk, and through their ruling of paying her the ksuba, you're allowing the Suffolk that she's innocent of Motsi Midei Vadai and taking out money which is definitely held by the Yorshe Habal. They are, we'll call, definite heirs. As far as who is to hold the money, the woman or the heirs? Well, the heirs are certain heirs. They're Vadai. The woman, does she have the money coming to her or not? Well, I don't know. She never drank. She's left in a state of suffix. So how can that be? How can something that is a mere doubt overpower that which has certainty? Kosavri beishamai. Well, it's because you're not dealing with a suffolk being motzi, and the key word here is motzi. Motzi means to remove or take away from, to extricate. You're not dealing with a suffolk overpowering by allowing the suffolk to take away the money from the heirs. Because why? Because Savri Be Shamai Shtara Oimed Ligvois Kegavui Dummy. A shtar, in this case the ksuba document that a woman has that guarantees her financial, we'll say financial welfare upon her becoming a widow, she's holding on to that shtar. She has a ksuba. She received that when she got married. So that she is the she's considered as if she collected it already. So the Yavama, in this case, we go back to our topic. The Yavama is therefore considered already in possession of the ksuba. So the Yavam who claims that he's inheriting the ksuba is then inheriting it from her, not from the brother, and therefore he should be, if he's laying claim to the ksuba, then he should definitely have to bury her, because he's receiving that ksuba through her, through the Yavama. The Gemara asks, but what about the language of the ksuba that we mentioned before? Veha bo'inon keshetinosi li'acher titli ma'ashe kosuv lichi v'leka. Once you're saying that dealing with shitas be'shamai, and therefore the Yavam is considered an inheriting her by claiming that ksuba, that in response to our original question of lo nitno ksuba likvos mechayim, that was based on darshaning the language of the ksuba. So in response to that, you said, well, it's she's considered already having collected it because of shtar oimed ligvos kegavui domi. But what about the language of the ksuba? That you didn't address. The fact is that in the ksuba it says kishetinosi liacher, when you marry someone else, you can then collect the ksuba, and that is not the case, because when, as long as either the husband or the yavam is alive, the yavam is like the husband being alive. So the ksuba cannot be collected by her. The Gemara says, Omar Avashi Yavam Nami Keacher Domi. The language of the ksuba was Kishitinosi Lacher, when you get married to someone else. The Yavam is like someone else. In other words, it was a mistaken notion to view the Yavam as a continuation of the brother, of the deceased brother. The Rashi toward the end of the narrow lines, Yovam Nami Kacher Domi, Vekevon Shetirosa Misa Sabali Nosli Yovam, since the death of the husband enables her, would have enabled her to marry the Yovam, my Oysa Shah Zochsa Benechosim. From that moment, she receives the Ksuba, the Nechosim, the properties, the Ksuba. Because from that point, she was called Tinosi Liacher, as the language suggests, as the language of the Ksuba suggests. We continue in the Gemara. Sholach le Rava le Abaye biyad Rav Shmaya bar Zera. Well, Rava, who started off the whole, you know, the whole series of questions here, he continues, and Rashi points out a structural note that Sholach Le Rav Labai, Rashi on the last narrow line, Li Acher Sheheshivo O Sheal Sheilos Vemer Nitna Ksuba Ksubas Yevoma Ligvois Mechayim Sheyavam, after Abaye answered him, answered Rava, that the ksuba of a yavama is something she could have been viewed as having collected while the yavam was still alive. So Rava continues with a question. Umi nitno, we're back in the Gemara text, umi nitno ksuba ligvos mechayim, is that really so? V'ha Tanya, we have a question. You'll notice that this is a long question. So he says, just in terms of the, call it the facts, can you really say that the ksuba of a yavama is something that she could be viewed as having collected? Now, when this isn't, I want to just say something that we've learned in the past, and that is the ksuba due to a woman is backed up, is supported, is guaranteed by the properties that the husband owns. And as long as the ksuba, as a couple is married, as the ksuba hasn't been paid, so the properties cannot be sold. Certainly in the case of a yavam and yavama, that's going to be true. We're going to see more about this later. I don't want to get too burdened with details so as not to becloud the Gemara. But the basic question is, as reading in the Gemara now, Umi nitna ksuba ligvos mechayim, can the ksuba of a yavama be viewed as her having already collected it? V'ha Tanya, Rabbi Abba Oimer, Sho'alti is Sumchus. I asked Sumchus, a name of a Tana, Haroitza sheyimkor benichse ochiv, a yavam that wants to sell properties that he inherited from his brother after he did Yibum, after he marries her. It's a well-known Torah law that after the Yavam marries the Yavama, the estate of the deceased brother becomes his, becomes the Yavam's. So a Yavam that wants to sell some of the properties that he inherited from his brother, Ketzaru Oseh, and what is restrictive here is that the ksuba due to the yavama is backed up by all of the brother's properties. So just to say to the yavam, well, do whatever you like. He can't do whatever he likes because those properties are bound to the yavama, to his wife. So what should he do? Ketzad oise? In kayin hu? If the Yavam is a Kohen, and the laws of Kahuna state that a Kohen who divorces his wife, he cannot take her back. So if he's a Kohen, the idea of divorcing her and then paying the ksuba and then taking back and then doing whatever he wants with the properties, that's not in the cards here. If he's a Kohen, Yaseh Seuda V'Yafayis. He should make a meal, and a big meal in honor of his wife. Rashi says to lefatosa means to seduce her, in other words, to convince her, b'mishteh hayayin, with a feast of wine. And during that time, he will appease her and convince her to give him permission to sell any properties that are above the value of the ksuba. We said that the properties guarantee the ksuba. If the ksuba is worth $200 and the properties that he inherited are worth $1,000, so he's asking the wife to allow him to sell $800 worth of the properties. There will remain $200 that will back up the ksuba that she has. So that's Yafias. Let him appease her to allow him to do that type of sale. The source goes on, Im Yisrael, who, if the Yavam was a non-Kohen and he had married the woman, and this Yisrael husband wants to sell properties that he inherited from his brother, who, if he's Yisrael, then Megaresh Beget Viachsir. He should divorce her. At the point that he divorces her, so that is the time at which he would pay her the ksuba. And once he pays the ksuba, the rest of the brother's properties are his for doing whatever he wants. And then, after he sells whatever he wants, viachsir, and then he could take her back. And then he takes her back. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. The e salka daitin, if it were so, that nitno ksuba ligvois mechayim, that it's possible to have a ksuba paid during the lifetime of the yavam, niyached lo shiur ksuba, let him earmark, delineate a certain amount of property that corresponds to her ksuba, v'shar lisvin, and let him sell the rest, so that as far as the woman being cared for ksuba wise, if it's something that she could be viewed as having collected during his lifetime, let him just do this. And yet, the source does not offer that suggestion. So what do we see from here? We see that the ksuba is not something that can be viewed as being paid off during the lifetime of the yavam. And since it's not paid off, it's not, the ksuba doesn't go to her. So as we said at the beginning of the sugya, therefore, the yavam in his claim, I don't want to bury her, and the ksuba is something I'm not getting from her anyway, seems to be true, because she never gets it. She doesn't get it in the lifetime of the yavam. This is we'll call Rava's question to Abaye. Abaye says back, "L'tamech, according to you, that you're trying to make your point from this brisa, the loiswami masnisen. Why don't you try to make your point from the Mishnah itself, that the ksuba is not nitan ligvois mechayim? The Mishnah said, and we learned this, lo yomar law, the yavam should not say to the yavam, harei ksubasech munachas lecha lashulchan, here's your ksuba, it's on the table, the value of it's it, here's some money, some gold or whatever, it's on the table, and that's your ksuba payment. He's not allowed to do that. Elakol nichasav achroin l'ksubasa. Rather, all of his property remains bound to the ksuba. So if Abaye is saying to Rava, if you want to make your point, why didn't you make your point from the Mishnah? So Rava says back, I'll tell you why I didn't make my point from the Mishnah. This is a long response, at the end of which my question will remain. Like if you're trying to challenge my question by my poor choice in sources, then why didn't I make the point from the Mishnah? I'll tell you why I didn't make the point from the Mishnah. The Mishnah, when it said that a man shouldn't put on the table the ksuba money, that's just a piece of good advice. And we'll get back to that in a minute. But let's skip the bracketed section for a moment. The Mishnah represented simply good advice, not real law. Not binding law, even though advice is important also, but it's not binding law. But what Rabbi Abba taught, that's binding law. And from Rabbi Abba's, that was the source at the bottom of Omid Aleph, and in that source, it was clear that lo nitno ksuba ligvos mechayim. She is not said to have collected the ksuba. So Rava is emphasizing that the ksuba doesn't really go to her. The Abaye answers, "De Rabbi Abba Nami Lo Kashya." Rabbi Abba doesn't really show me that by letter of the law that a ksuba cannot be considered collected by her during her lifetime, because Rabbi Abba's teaching is Mishum Eva. It's also just a piece of good advice so as not to create strife in a family. But technically speaking, if he wanted to, he could have in fact paid the ksuba to her during his lifetime, and in terms of halacha, we will view it as if she had collected the ksuba, and therefore the yavam in effect is, if he is laying claim to the ksuba money, he's in effect inheriting from her, and since he's inheriting from her, he has to bury her, and if he doesn't want to bury her, then the ksuba money should be paid out for her burial. We skip the section of Gemara that is here to show that the Mishnah, when it said that a person should not say, Yavam shouldn't say to the Yavama that here's your money for the ksuba on the table, and in other words, he shouldn't do that. That's just a piece of good advice. And Rashi says on the upper part of the narrow lines, Rashi says, Eitzah Teva, it's good advice, Shemo Yovdo Metatalin, the portables, the articles that he designated to her ksuba that he would have put on the table might get lost, Venimseis below ksuba, and then she's left without a ksuba, Vetzach Lichta Ksuba Acheres. Then he'll have to write up another ksuba. Person is not allowed to remain married to his wife without her having a ksuba. The Gemara. Let's go back to the Gemara text. Rava said, listen, don't expect me to have tried to make the point that Lo Nitna Ksuba Ligvais Mechayim from the Mishnah, because the Mishnah was merely good counsel. De'i Lo Teima Hochi. We're reading in the bracketed section, six lines from the top of the Omid. If you're not going to say that the Mishnah is simply good counsel, Seifa Dekotani. The end of the Mishnah says as follows, V'chein lo yoimar odom liishto, a man should not say to his wife. In the same Mishnah, it says, with a regular married couple, not a Yovam case, but a regular husband and wife, a man should not say to his wife, Harei ksubosech munachas lecha al hashulchan, the money that is owed to you in your ksuba, here it is, it's here on the table, and consider deal done, I don't owe you anything anymore. He shouldn't do that. Rather, all of a man's properties are bound to the ksuba, and he doesn't earmark specific articles for her ksuba. Now, regarding the husband and wife, if a man, a husband, would want to sell his own properties, his hard-owned properties, all husbands of the world are not allowed to sell any of their properties. That's not true. Of course they're allowed to sell their properties. The Mishnah that said that he shouldn't earmark money or articles for her ksuba, thereby freeing him to sell whatever he wants, is simply a piece of good advice. As we saw in Rashi, because if the articles that you earmark might get lost, and they'll have to write up a new ksuba. So hachanami, so too in the case of the Yavam, Eitza Teiva Kamash Malan. The teaching concerning the Yavam was also a piece of good counsel. Elo de Rabbi Abba Kashya. But from Rabbi Abba, the case wasn't dealing with simple good counsel. It was telling me, black on white, a man who wants to sell his brother's properties, in other words, the Yavam wants to sell his brother's properties, the only option he has is what was stated there, and not to simply put some articles and designate some articles or portables as the ksuba. So what do we see? That the ksuba cannot be paid off. It's not viewed as paid off by the Yavam in his lifetime. So finally, Abaye says back the Rabbi Abba source is also a piece of good counsel. And Mishum Eva. What's the point? Here you have a Yavama couple. They're married, and hopefully reasonably good marriage. When a woman, in this case the Yavama, which is his wife, sees him designating articles for payment of her ksuba and putting on the table, saying to her, this is your ksuba, that shows her that he's considering divorcing her. That shows her that he doesn't like her. That will create enmity in between the two. And therefore, it's good advice not to do that. However, technically speaking, the ksuba is something that could be paid off by the Yavam in his lifetime. And as far as the language of concern of Tinosi Liacher, the Yavam is an Acher. So it's something that could be viewed as having been paid off to her. And as a result of that, we can tell the Yavam, either you bury her, or you lay out the ksuba. Lay out the ksuba money, of course, that is for her, which would be used for her burial. So at this point then, we've come to the end of that particular give and take. The question had been on that which we learned in our previous year, that the Yavam is the one who's obligated to bury the Yavama that died while waiting to do Yibum. It's the Yavam's obligation. And what we discussed up till now in our shir is that the Yavam has no option of saying, listen, I am here merely an heir of my brother. I don't have to bury his wife. We tell him, if you don't want to bury his wife, then you had better part with the ksuba, because the ksuba is something that was due to her, something that you should have paid her. The Gemara continues, before going on, I say you should have paid her, meaning it's money that was due to her. If you know, if you're not going to bury her, then at least that should be given to her. And as far as any claim, and just we're repeating ourselves, but as far as any claim that a Yavam in his lifetime doesn't pay out the ksuba, that claim we already answered. On the side of the Gemara, we have a Mivne, a structural note, because we're going to encounter now a bow tie marking. There are two bow ties that will appear under this particular structural note. The second one will, Mirtz Hashem, be part of a subsequent shiur, because it's found on Daf Pei Beis Amud Aleph, eight lines from the top. The bow tie highlights Shnei Maisim. I'm reading on the side. Shnei Maisim B'Yavam Sherotsu Ochiv or Echov Leposlo Miliabem Hayavoma. Two incidents in which we see a concerning a Yavam. Now, as we said earlier, a Yavam inherits his brother's properties. Just for the sake of illustration, imagine the brother was a fantastically wealthy individual. And he left a couple brothers with you. Just for the sake of illustration, we'll say there's the Yavam and there's one or two other brothers. You can just imagine, if Yibum would not be done, the brother's estate would be inherited equally, would be split and shared by all of the surviving brothers. When one brother does Yibum, when he marries the widow, and in this case he'd be marrying the widow of a fantastically wealthy mogul, he alone is going to get all of the money. So you can imagine how, let's say, disappointed the other brothers would be. So there are, we'll call, rabbinic instruments that are capable of preventing Yibum to take place by one of the brothers. Generally speaking, in Yibum, the oldest of the surviving brothers is the one that's expected to Yibum, even though that's not a binding aspect of law. It's not Ma'akev. Nevertheless, if we just use that for, again, in our illustration, the halacha would recognize that if one of the other brothers would give the Yavama a divorce document, a get, even though a get given to a Yavama isn't a real divorce document, nevertheless, on a rabbinic level, it amounts to the stopping of any Yibum from taking place. And if Yibum doesn't take place, so then the brothers' properties would be shared equally by all of them. Now, in our story, we have a Yavam that really wants, or it appears that he really wants to do Yibum. And he'll feel threatened by the brothers threatening to thwart the Yibum attempts. The Gemara. Hahu Gavra. There was a man, Denofla Le'Yavama B'Pumbedisa. This man had a brother who had lived in Pumbedisa. He died without children, and a Yavama emerged in Pumbedisa. In other words, his wife, the widow, was left living in Pumbedisa. Boy Achva Le'Mifsulala B'Gita Minei. The other brothers wanted to Mifsala means to render her unfit for Yibum by throwing her a get, a divorce document, and a Yevama that receives a divorce document then becomes forbidden to all of the brothers. Omar Leh, so the Hahu Gavra, the fellow in the bow tie, appropriately so maybe, that fellow, we'll call him the eldest brother, he says, my daitech, what is your intent? Why do you want to stop me from doing evil? Mishum nichsi, because you want to get a part of the estate of our deceased brother. Ano b'nichsi paligno loch. I'll give you your share of the nechosim anyway, as if I wouldn't do Yibum. Just let me do Yibum. I really, and this is how he presents himself to the brother, he says, I really want to do Yibum. I really want to do this mitzvah. Don't stop me. And as far as your feeling of being deprived from a portion of the properties, I'll give each one of you a portion as if I wouldn't be doing the Yibum. That sounds very generous on his part. We have a marking that is explained on the side where we continue this discussion under the Nosei Mivneh heading. We have a volcano shape. It's featured on the side of the Gemara. We call this a Ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a give-and-take style Gemara. This give-and-take, you can see just by scanning ahead, takes us clear to the next Omid. The trapezoid or volcano shape with the narrow part facing up, Rav Yosef, Ha de Omu Rabbonon, Lo Lizvin. There is what we're going to be dealing with is, can the Yavam actually do this? Can he say, I'm going to give you all a portion of the properties? So we're going to have to analyze a concept, and that is things that the Rabbonin said, cases concerning which the Rabbonin said, do not sell. Izovan, if a person violates that and he does conduct a sale that he was told not to do, lo hoya zvine zvini, the sale is void. That's Rav Yosef's approach. When the Rabbonin say not to do something, it's serious. It means don't do it. If you do it, it's not going to take hold. With that in mind, with that concept in mind, and we apply it to our case here, the Yavam's offer here is meaningless. When we see the inverted shape, Abaye cholik. Abaye argues with Rav Yosef, the Sover, and holds the im zavan zvine zvine. When a person is told not to sell, and he does sell, the sale will go ahead, will be considered binding. The Gemara now continues. Omar Rav Yosef. Kevan de Omar Rabbonon. Lo Lisbon. We're dealing here with a Yavam and a Shomeres Yavam, a woman, the Yavama that's waiting for the Yibum marriage. The Rabbonon had said, and we learned this just above, that a Yavam is not allowed to sell properties. They are bound to the Yavama. The deceased brother's properties are not to be sold. Those properties are bound to serve as a guarantee, as a backup in the Yavama's interest. So the sale or the distribution of Yavam of a deceased brother's properties comes under this heading of things that the Rabbonin said do not sell. And Rav Yosef says, Afal gav dezoven lo have zvine zvini. And therefore, even if he does sell, the sale is void. Desanyo, mishemeis viniach shomeres yavam viniach nechos b'mei amona. A person died, and he left a widow, and left no children, and he left properties worth mei amona, $1 billion. Afal pi shiksubosa eino ela mona. Even though her ksuba is only $200. There's a vast estate here, and the ksuba would account for a very small fraction of that estate. Lo yimkar, the yavam is not to sell any of his deceased brother's properties. Shekol nechosav achroin l'ksuba, so all of the deceased's estate is bound to the ksuba. So what Rav Yosef is saying, that this, the offer that the that this brother is making to his siblings is void, has no value. And now, Abaye responds. Amar le Abaye, v'chol hecha di omer rabbanan lo lizvin afagav de zovin lo have zvine zvine. Is that really so, that wherever the rabbanan say don't sell, therefore even if a person does sell, that the sale is going to be void? V'otnan, beishamay omrim timkor, u'beisil omrim lo timkor. This we saw in the opening Mishnah of the Perek, where a woman had inherited money, inherited property, and as an arusa, Beis Hillel says, Beis Shammai says she's allowed to sell, Beis Hillel says no, Elu ve'elu modim, Beis Hillel agrees with Beis Shammai, however, she'im mochra v'nos nekayim. Notice we dashed underlined the main phrases. On the one hand, don't sell, but if a sale took place, the sale stands. So at this point, Abaye is saying, in so many words, that the offer made by the Yavam above to divide the properties amongst the brothers, just as long as they don't try to stop his interest in doing the Yibum, sounds like a reasonable offer, something that could be done. As we go on in the Gemara, you're going to see, again, we're continuing our marking scheme. Narrow part facing up supports Rav Yosef. Inverted shape supports Abaye. Sholchua lekamei de Rebbe Chanina bar Popi. Sholcha kidder Rav Yosef. So they sent this story of the Yavam having whose Yavama emerges in Pupadisa. And Rav Chanina says, like Rav Yosef responded, that the offer is void. Omar Abaye, Otu Rabbi Chanina bar Popi Kifi Tolola. Abaye is not impressed with that. Did Rabbi Chanina offer any reasons? All he does is says, I like what Rav Yosef ruled. Literally translated, did Rabbi Chanina bar Popi attach jewelry or bracelets to that? Did he adorn the halacha? Did he embellish the halacha? So what? You have another one that says that way. That doesn't change my feeling. Shalchu lekamei de Rav Menyumi brei de Rav Nechumi. The case was sent to Rav Menyumi. Shalcha kida Abaye. That where a person, even though was told not to sell, but does sell, the sale goes ahead. So too, let the Yavam make the offer, even though he was told not to do that. If he does it, it's good. Ve'i Omar bo Rav Yosef taimo achrino shalchuli. How honest this is, meaning that right now I'm ruling like Abaye. If Rav Yosef has some additional svara, some additional reasoning, I want to hear it. Nofak Rav Yosef, dok v'ashkach. Rav Yosef went out, and he dok is to be medayik, to be careful, scrupulous, to be analytical, and he went out and researched and found Desanya the following source. Harei shohoya noisha be'ochiv umes. This case describes two brothers, and again we'll get to a Yibum situation in this source. There is, we'll say, Reuven and Shimon. Reuven had loaned money to Shimon. So Reuven was trying to collect, at a certain point, trying to collect the debt owed to him by his brother Shimon. Umes, and the Malveh, the lender, Reuven, died without children. V'niach Shemeres Yavam, and he left a widow waiting to do Yibum. And I think that it might be worth our imagining that there are other brothers in this case. So that the Yavam now is a borrower that had owed money, but the one to whom he owed the money died. Loy Yoimar, the Yavam, who is technically speaking obligated to pay the debt, and we should point out that this money that the Yavam is obligated to pay the brother is money that would have become part of the deceased's estate, which ultimately would have been subject to the guarantee a man owes to his wife's ksuba. Now, the Yavam should not say, Hayol v'shani yoresh, since I am going to be inheriting my deceased brother's estate, I'm going to, by taking in the wife, by taking in the Yavama, I inherit my brother. Hechzakti, I become the owner of the debt as well. And I'm not paying it anymore. I have nothing to pay. In other words, the one to whom I owed the money, I now inherited him. Ela motzien miyavam, that money will take away from the yavam, v'yikach bohen karka v'ochel peros. We'll buy a parcel of land, and that parcel of land will become a source of guarantee for the woman's ksuba. And the Yavam, who's now her husband, he'll benefit from the fruits of that land. Now, you see, we dashed underline Ela Motzien Miyavam. What do we see from here? That the Yavam can't do whatever he wants. Omar Le Abaye. Abaye says, almost in character with the sugya before, he says, Dilma de Tovale Avdule. Maybe it's an Eitze Toiva. Maybe this source represents a piece of simple good advice. That instead of you're just keeping the money, the debt that you owed him, and keeping that cash in your pocket and spending it, and it'll all be gone, buy a piece of land with it, and thereby preserve that forever. But not as a strict halachic teaching. Omar Lei, Rav Yosef says back, Tana Tani Motziin. The Tana speaks in very restrictive, very harsh, definitive terms. We take away the debt that he owed the brother. The Adam is the Tovale of the Lei, and you're saying it's just a piece of good advice? Not at all. We don't allow him to do whatever he wants with the brother's estate, including in that the debt that was owed to the brother. So you see that Rav Yosef's position is still being maintained. This is Rav Yosef's response to Abaye. Hodur Sholchua Kamed Rav Benyumi Breder of Nechumi. Notice we have a long marking. It seems to me that if we look back, we had Rav Menyumi mentioned earlier, and Rav Menyumi had said that if Rav Yosef says something else, let me know about it. So it could be that that's exactly what is referred to over here. They then sent it to Rav Menyumi. Remember, he was the one that wanted to know about any additional Rav Yosef points. And so it was sent back to Rav Menyumi, Omar Lahu, and they said to Rav Menyumi, Hochi Omar Rav Yosef Bar Menyumi, Omar Rav Nachman. And they told him, let me correct myself. After sending this discussion back to Rav Menyumi, they sent it after Rav Yosef had responded to Abaye. So they sent, as Rav Menyumi had requested, I want to know everything that Rav Yosef has to say. So they sent it to Rav Menyumi. And he heard Rav Menuhin heard that Rav Yosef was arguing from the source that said Elamotzi and Miyavam, strengthening Rav Yosef's position. Now Rav Menuhin, remember, he went like Abaye earlier. So Amar Lahu, Rav Menuhin says to them, ironically, Amar Lahu, Hachi Amar Rav Yosef Bar Menuhin, Amar Rav Nachman. Let's not confuse the names here. This is a different Rav Yosef. Thusly says Rav Yosef Bar Menuhin, in the name of Rav Nachman, Zu Eino Mishnah. That source that Rav Yosef was relying on is not a reliable brisa. The word Mishnah is not to be understood as the word Mishnah, as Mishnayis that Rabbi Yudah Nossi compiled. Mishnah means it's not, in this case, it means this is not a reliable teaching. Like the word Vishinantam Levonecha or Shona. Shona is to learn. This is not a reliable brisa. Brises were authored by Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Oshaya, and their brises were said to be reliable. Their brises were based on the teachings of Yudah Nasi. However, there are other kinds of brises that from time to time you see are declared as unreliable, non-authoritative. Now, at this point, we basically, the main part of the discussion ends. And that's why we have a bracketed section starting here, continuing till the upper part of Pei Beis Amud Aleph. The reason for these brackets is, as we just said, to indicate that this is the end of the discussion, and hence Rav Menuhin sticks with what he ruled before, like Abaye, and the subsequent arguments of Rav Yosef fall away because he was trying to base his position on something that's an unreliable source. Within the bracketed section, which we'll shortly continue with, is simply to prove why the source is unreliable. But if we skip the bracketed section momentarily, use your bracket length indicator, you come to a point in the Gemara where you see Omar Rava. Im Kain, Hainu de Shamano Le Labaye, de Omar Zu, Eino Mishnah. Now I understand Abaye had claimed that the source was unreliable, and I hadn't known what he meant, Veloyodana Maihi, and I didn't understand what he meant until now. It's interesting to note that I don't know when Abaye said that, because Abaye's initial reaction to that source had been that the source is simply an Eitz HaToiva. Apparently, at some other point, Abaye had said that Rava is saying, that it's not reliable, but certainly we saw that information in the name of Rav Nachman, who said, Zu Eino Mishnah. Okay, now we go into the bracketed section. Before we do that, again, because this kind of sukkah is very involved, very extensive back and forth, the bottom line is that, and you can see this, by the way, if you stick with your geometric forms, the markings, the final marking in this give and take was an inverted volcano shape. So that what would result then, if you go back to the beginning of this whole passage, the offer that the Yavam had made in the case of the Yavama that felt him in Pupadisa would seem to be a reasonable offer. That, listen, don't stop me from doing the Yibum, and if your only concern was getting a share of the property, I'll give it to you anyway. And he could do that. Even though the Rabbanan say that a Yavam should not sell or give away his brother's property because it's all bound to the ksuba of the Yavama, nevertheless, if he does it, he does it. Okay, now as we said, we're going into the bracketed section where we have to show how the source in which it said Elamotzi and Miyavam, that source is not reliable. So now the Gemara asks, five lines from the bottom of Amud Beis. My time. The double underline is explained under the Mivneh heading. These represent Shlavim, stages, Lochiach, to prove Lomo HaMokur Shoharei Shoya Noishe V'chulei is Eino Mishnah, that source is simply not reliable. My time. In Lemo, this is the first stage. In Lemo Mishum Dahavu Luhu Metaltali. Because the debt, it's basically, he owes cash to pay the deceased to have paid his brother, who now died. But the issue concerned money. Metatali is something that's portable, like cash. Metatali liksuba lo mishabdi. And metatali and portables are not bound toward the payment of the ksuba. So it's not bound. So what the source said, that we restrict him, is a mistake. Because on what grounds were we restricting him? Because the properties of the deceased belongs, is bound to the ksuba. But that's not true when it comes to metatalin. So the brother couldn't have been restricted. That's not an argument, though. Dilma Rebbe Meir, that source might be in accordance with Rebbe Meir, the Omar, metatalin mishabdi l'ksuba, that portables are bound toward the ksuba payment. And Rashi gives you the background for that. He proves that from that which we've already learned. We continue in the Gemara. V'ela mishum the Omar law, maybe the unreliability of that source is because the Yavam says at Lav Baal Dvorim Didi At. I have nothing to do with you insofar as the loan. In other words, I didn't borrow the money from you. I borrowed it from my brother. And right now, I'm inheriting my brother. You're out of the picture. You have nothing to do with this. And therefore, what the source says, that we take the amount of that debt and designate it toward her ksuba, bind it to her ksuba, it's unreasonable. He doesn't owe her anything. But that also is not an argument. We continue at the top of Pei Beis. Dilma Rebbe Nosson Hi. Maybe the source is also in accordance with Rebbe Nosson. After having said that the source reflects Rebbe Meir's opinion with regard to portables, with regard to this aspect, the source is accurate because it conforms to Rebbe Nosson. What is Rebbe Nosson's principle? Desanya. We'll see that in the source. Rebbe Nosson Oimer, Minayin l'noishe b'chavero mona, v'chavero b'chavero. How do we know that if A owes B, and B owes C, so have a type of domino setup. A owes B, chain reaction here, if A owes B and B owes C, from where do we know that C can go and collect from A? Talmud Lomar, the Pasuk says, V'nosan la'asher oshein lo. Without getting into the actual scriptural proof and how to understand it from the words, the main point for us is to understand that the brother, the Yavam that is, the Yavam, owed money to the brother, to the one who was deceased. That brother owed potentially money to the wife. So the wife does have a claim. In this case, the Yavama does have a claim on that money. And if you're going to argue that the money is metaltalin, so what? We're also learning according to Rebbe Meir. So that if you combine these two, we'll call chumras, two stringencies, A, holding like Rebbe Meir, and B, holding like Rebbe Nosson, then you can understand why you can then understand that the source is actually quite reliable. So why would Rav Nachman say that the source is not reliable? Stage 3. Gimel. Elo loy ashkechon tana de machmir trei chumri b'ksuba. In order for us to make this Ksuba source that deals with the Yavama and her interest in getting the Ksuba, in order to make this source reliable, you had to impose, you have to introduce two stringencies. And we don't find two stringencies imposed when it comes to laws of Ksuba. Ella, rather, if you want to talk about stringencies, E. Karebi Meir, E. Karebi Nosson. You can choose one or the other, but to say that, to introduce both as being the basis for the source, that would be out of bounds. The Rashi on the upper part of the page, the second, third line from the top, Ella, we have a little star there to help you find it. Ella Lahachi Eino Mishnah. This is the reason, as we said, the two chumras is that this source is not reliable. In other words, Rav Yosef was originally basing his opinion on something that was not reliable. V'toh hatano shishona, and whoever taught over that source, whoever reported it as a source, was not careful. D'lo ashkantana d'islei trechumri b'ksubo. We don't find any Tanaic authorities that hold that you apply two stringencies when it comes to laws of ksuba. Sharei himidivrei sofrim. The idea of having a ksuba to begin with is a rabbinic enactment. And what are the two chumras? Chada de metatli mishabdi law. One chumra was to suggest, like Rabbi Meir, that portables are bound to the ksuba. V'chada de gavim mibal chovo shel meis midu Rabbi Nosson. And that the woman, based on Rabbi Nosson's law, has a claim on the debtor, the one who owed money to the deceased. Elochadamana chumri avile lemisniba. One of these chumras he could have taught, Ikrabi Meir, Ikrabi Nosson, but even the Tana Travaya, since he taught both, lo kiblo me rabo, Cain, he never received this source as a tradition from his teachers, ume elov shana, and on his own he taught it, misha sider habraisa, velo samchinon ala b'midian. We don't rely on it at all. And then, as we saw before, we read again, Omar Rava im Kain, if this be the case, then Hainu de Shamano Leila Abai Domar Zuena Mishnah. I understand what Abai was saying, that it's not a reliable source. Velo Yodana, and I didn't know up till now, my he, what he had meant. As you can see, we have another bow tie shape leading us into another story with a Yavam and brothers that want to stop the Yibum. And Mirza Shem will get to that in our next shiur. But before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.